Hello and welcome to episode 51 of the Blue Cup Tools podcast. I am Francisco Gonzalez, also known as Grundislav, and with me as always...
Hello, Grundislav, a.k.a. Francisco Gonzalez. I am Ben Chandler, a.k.a. Ben304.
Hello, Ben Chandler, a.k.a. Ben304.
I like saying AKA. It reminds me how silly the English language is.
I like saying
that also ACA. Known as would be AKA.
Yeah, I just like pronouncing it ACA because it's ridiculous ACA. Enough as it is. So I say, yeah, hi, I'm Grundislav ACA Francisco Gonzalez.
Isn't that what the pilots used to nickname anti aircraft guns? AC or something like that.
Anti aircraft guns. Wouldn't it be AG?
I think they used to call them ACAC. It's been a long time since I was an airplane nerd, so...
Oh, okay.
I'm sure Chris Olsen could probably help us out.
Yeah,
Chris, if
help
you're
us. Help us, Chris Olsen. Wait, no, help Chris us. Olsen can't help us because he's had a baby. Congratulations, Chris Olsen.
Oh, congratulations, Chris. That's amazing.
Yeah. Yes.
Not him having a baby, personally.
Just the miracle.
Like, it's not like Alien with the yeah.
Yeah, no. The miracle of life. So hopefully all is well, Chris, and you're listening to this podcast and you're on vacation and et cetera, et cetera. People like shoutouts, don't
and
they?
Teach your infant early to get into like DOS flight simulators.
Teach
your, that's what you want.
Oh man, tell the listeners about the game, the dream you had.
No, that'll take too long. That's too embarrassing. I'm shy now.
Why? How about I ask you about it?
basically, I was on an aeroplane, and I was on an aeroplane in my dream, and we were flying to America because you'd been nagging me. Come to America, get your passport, come to America. So I said, right.
As I have been, and I will do. Come to America, get your passport.
And the pilot and the co-pilot died.
Yes. That's,
on the aeroplane.
Yes.
And,
yes, that's terrible.
And this, which is an awful dream already, but it's an amazing dream because the stewardesses, I guess that's what they're called.
Flight attendants. They don't like being called stewardesses anymore.
I'm not good at political correctness.
Well, you also don't fly on planes much, so you wouldn't know.
No, not much. Right, so the flight attendants were coming down the aisles saying, look, is there anybody on this plane, any passengers here that are a pilot that can pilot one of these planes? And I said, no, but I've played a lot of Microsoft Flight Simulator 5.1, the last one for DOS. The last version they made for MS-DOS. From there, they went to Microsoft Flight Simulator 95.
Yes.
You know, which is basically the same game, but it runs in Windows 95. And I think they made a couple of little improvements. Anyway, so they're like, well, I guess you'll have to do, you know. So anyway, I went to the cockpit. You know, this isn't a dream still. Just reminding people, because I know I tell a story, it feels real. You know, it's total immersion. But this is all still fantasy.
Yes.
And I said, look, I'm not 100% sure on the controls on this aircraft because this plane isn't in Microsoft Flight Simulator 5.1, the last one they made for DOS.
Oh no, you should have downloaded the mod.
What's that, sorry?
You should have downloaded the mod. I had a mod for MS-DOS Flight Simulator 5.1 where I had a plane
Which plane? I don't even know which plane it was in the dream.
Oh, it was probably a 737 or 747 or something. Well, but I had a commercial airliner downloaded as a special plane in my 5.0 and it had the different controls and everything.
I think Chris Olsen flies some jets that they start with F jets or something like that. Anyway, they're like, do you know anyone that can like sort of walk you through how to fly the plane? I'm like, yeah, there's Chris Olsen. We're going to LaGuardia Airport. We're going to New York. He flies there. So they got Chris on the, is that a walkie talkie? It's not a walkie talkie. It's a radio.
I guess it would be.
Yeah, so they got Chris on there, and he was like, okay, well, this is where all the controls are, and this is what you need to do. And I landed the aircraft
in
LaGuardia Airport. It was amazing, and it was a really great dream. It was euphoric, is what the term I want to go to here. And then the mayor of New York was like, wow, this is really great. You know, this nerd, basically, I have to interview him on live television on news. And so I'm there with the mayor of New York and, like, you know, other important people, and they're like, have you got anything to say to the people of the world? And I was like, yeah, you should all play DOS games more because look how handy this was. That's like, I had one minute of television fame, and the only thing I used it for was to tell, which, I mean, I don't regret that. I stand by that sentiment. So yeah, I've had a really interesting week. That's just one thing.
Yeah.
That's just one thing that's happened in my week.
I have to say,
my grandma told me a story about her childhood which made me laugh, but I don't want to tell too many stories. If I share all of my anecdotes now, we'll run out of time to talk about computer game things. So that can wait another day, I think.
You should keep all of your secrets. Is sage advice that you've received. Keep your secrets secret or something.
No, isn't that what I know?
Anyway.
No. Anyway,
aside from having a marrying amazing dreams. Oh, actually, I have a question. Wait, no, you've heard Chris Olsen speak before, haven't you, on the podcast?
He was on Anatoly's podcast. Yeah. And also he left a message on the Upper Memory Block podcast, which I've been listening to as well. I listened to the Wing Commander one this week. It is such a great podcast. Everybody that listens to this that likes retro games, DOS and pre-Windows XP gaming, should go and check that out. It's such a great podcast. I have a great time listening to it.
I dropped into Joe. Is it Joe? Joe's?
Yeah.
Yeah, I dropped into... Joe was doing a live stream of Wing Commander the other day to do a video podcast, and I dropped in and watched a little bit, and it was lovely.
Did you get nostalgic?
I got nostalgic, and I told him that I hadn't played it with sound for, like, the majority of my life.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, he said also on his podcast, he said before he got his Sound Blaster knockoff card, he played it with PC speaker, which incidentally is the only way I've played Monkey Island, The Secret of Monkey Island, and I keep meaning to change that, but I'm terrified.
Yeah, it's not so bad. But I was going to, the reason I brought this up was because I was going to ask if you hadn't heard Chris, I was curious how his voice came across in your dream when he was talking on the walkie-talkie.
No. See, I'm experienced enough to know what he sounds like.
All right. I have to, I've just revealed that I haven't listened to that podcast. I should probably do that later today.
You know now. See, now you know what you have
now
to do.
I know what I have to do. Anyway, did I
tell you that I was listening to the Upper Memory Box podcast and Chris Lapine's voice was on there?
Yes, we mentioned it last podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Or the podcast before last.
I'm still just pining for Chris Lapine.
I see what you did there.
Yeah.
Walk, walk, walk. Anyway, aside from having amazing dreams, well, how's the rest of your week been? What have you been up to? Have you been playing
games?
I've
had a good week. Yeah, I played through entirely King's Quest VI.
You did?
With your company last weekend, which was delightful. I enjoyed it a lot. It's
the game or my company?
Well, both. It was a lovely combination. It's like peanut butter and jelly. Two amazing things come together to make a fantastic thing.
Excuse me while I throw up over here.
Well, I'm still not as twee as King's Quest.
That's absolutely true. Yes.
But you were there. I enjoyed the game, you know, and obviously beautiful VGA art is something that I'm a big fan of, and King's Quest VI absolutely. Like, my favorite thing is that they did away with, like, the sunburnt skin tones of King's Quest V, and actually, you know, Alexander looks good.
Well, you know, you know why the skin tones were sunburnt in King's Quest V, right?
Is it a holdover from the EGA days?
That's my best theory. Because King's Quest V was their first VGA game, so I think they were used to that sort of thing, so they just,
I gotta say this, you know that EGA sunburnt pink, that watermelon kind of color, that dark, that burnt watermelon color?
I know it well.
That's my least favorite color in the entire world.
Mm. Yeah, it's pretty disgusting.
It's awful. It's like the standard AGS font color.
That's true, it is.
And it's awful. I don't like it.
Listeners, if you're going to make an AGS game, please, for the love of God, change your default text color and never use the default AGS font. It's terrible. It's the Comic
Sans.
That's really
sound advice.
It's the Comic Sans of AGS.
Well, isn't that font from Space Quest?
Oh, well, yeah, the font's from Space Quest. I don't mind the font. I just mind the color of it.
Yeah, I am in agreement. I'm not a big fan of that color. And you see it so much because people are like, I'm a busy human being. I don't have time. You do have time.
You do have time.
It takes a very short little effort.
Yeah.
To change that font to something more aesthetically pleasing to the players that are going to play your game.
And especially now, you have an unlimited number of colors to choose from.
You have so many colors.
You used to only be able to have the palette, but now you can,
I'm going to say this. If you can't find the color that you like, message one of us.
Yeah.
We'll give you a color.
We'll give you a,
We'll do that. That's how committed we are to never seeing burnt watermelon, which is the color I'm giving. That's the name I'm giving that color.
Good.
Ever again.
If it was in the box of crayons, it would be burnt watermelon.
Yeah, but crayon colors really have the most interesting names, you know?
They do. Yeah, it's been a while.
As soon as you get to paints, it's like, you know, burnt umber and like sienna and ochre. When you're a kid, you know, you've got like peppermint green and stuff like that.
Well, what about phthalo blue? That's a fun one.
I can never figure out how that's spelled because I've seen it spelled several different ways and I'm like, who's correct? Because some are like phthalo.
Yeah.
And some don't have the P there. So really? I want to know.
I've never seen it without the P.
Well, you've got more experience with oil paints than I do, so...
Yeah, not too much. Anyway, aside from things...
What else I saw The Godfather at the theater this week, which I really enjoyed. I took a little box of Smarties. You don't get Smarties there, but they're like big M&Ms. Have you had Smarties? Not American Smarties,
I think I've had Smarties in the UK.
Okay, yeah, so they're basically... They come in like a small cardboard, a rectangular prism... For those who care about shapes, for the shape elitists, it's a rectangular prism, and they're oblique spheroids or something. I don't know. I'm making this up.
You're getting too fancy for me.
Yeah, so I took my little box of Smarties in, and I sat there and I was watching it, and it was such an intense and exhilarating experience that I was crunching through them. I ran out of Smarties about halfway through, and I've always got candy left over after films, so, you know. That says a lot. I mean, it was a long film, but still.
You know what you should have taken is an orange.
Yeah. I should have done. But anyway, so yeah, I enjoyed it a lot. I can see why it's a classic, you know?
Yeah.
And, I really like... There's a moment when Al Pacino... What's his name?
Michael Corleone.
Right. He's been sent away because of when he's done the bad things, you know, and he's there to the cafe and they're talking about the daughter and the guy goes away and he's like, bring him here, you know, and you can see he's sort of, that's kind of a little moment where the guy's personality changes, you know, that's a very interesting moment. I really enjoyed that in the film. It was nice to see.
Is that the bit where he's got the gun hidden in the toilet?
Well, that's after that, a long time after that.
Okay. It's been a long time since I saw The Godfather. I don't remember it detail for detail.
Yeah, no, that's a fair bit after that. Okay. Like, he's still kind of nervous and not very in control at that point.
Okay.
But this is the point where he suddenly looks very controlled and, you know, it's a changing point in his character. It's nice to see that done in such a elegant, simple fashion.
Yes.
So, yeah, good film. I enjoyed it a lot.
Good.
And I've also been playing King's Quest VII. I started King's Quest VII... rather boldly, immediately after King's Quest VI.
You did, yeah, which was an interesting move.
Yeah, they're very, very different games. Like, 6 is extremely similar to 5 in terms of tone, in terms of, like, look, you know, and in terms of design philosophy, whereas 7, they've, you know... It's kind of disappointing that they've gone with a one-click cursor because King's Quest, for me, the best thing is, like, exploring this world, you know, and seeing what it's all about.
Yep.
And suddenly that's gone, you know. And it feels kind of kiddie. I mean, obviously it's got the Disney vibe.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say, and this will probably surprise some people, I know most of our listeners have probably played the King's Quest games. I've warmed up to it a little since I've started playing, you know. At first I didn't like it at all, and I'm warming up to it.
Really? When did this happen? Because last I talked to you, you were saying about how every single character in the game was really annoying, and you hated them all.
Well, they are very annoying, but there's there's annoying characters in King's Quest 6 as well.
Well, yeah. But
King's Quest, there aren't many strong characters in King's Quest because they rely on tropes to tell the story. You know, the whole thing is princes and maidens.
Lots of maidens.
There's a lot of maidens, you know?
Yeah.
And I like Iron Maiden. but that's totally different, you know? Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner, Ace of
Fire. To the hills!
That's a great song.
There's some more headbanging for Brian.
The weirdest thing in my entire experience of, like, going to see bands play was going to see Iron Maiden and going, these guys are as old as my dad, and they rock out just about harder than anyone I've ever seen.
That's how I felt when I went to go see The Who.
Yeah.
Back in 2007.
That's crazy that people that age can still do that, you know? Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Man, so, you know, I sang, old people still have it.
I sang Run to the Hills at karaoke one time, and I was so disappointed because that's a fast song. And
it is a fast song.
The karaoke version slowed it down considerably, and I was just like, what the fuck? I want to do it fast, but I have to slow it down. Wow. So
man, there's nothing worse than doing a fast song really slow. I just came back from band practice, which is why my voice is kind of probably a little huskier than usual. You know, 3 hours of enthusiastic rock and roll vocals. That does that to you.
Did you sing Two Princes?
Yes, I good. Did. Oh, man, I'm all about the 90s classics, you know that.
Anyway.
Yes. Yeah, that's the best thing. That's thing. That and the last time, and the last time he runs down with the chorus.
Yeah.
And so what am I saying?
Talking about King's Quest VII.
King's Quest VII. It kind of, you know what really annoys me? And it makes me feel like they've just totally lost what makes an adventure game. You know, like I said, I'm warming to it a little bit. Mm-hmm. But it annoys me that I don't have a look function, you know, so I can't examine the environment.
Yeah.
And it also annoys me that when I use my inventory items, you know, if I've got one selected, I can't actually try using it on anything unless the cursor highlights. Now, I like a highlighting cursor over hotspot. That's fine. I can handle that. And I have that in all of my games. I think that's wise, you know, especially for modern games. In old games, I can handle it if it's not there.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, but in this, the cursor, if you've got an item selected, the cursor will only highlight over the thing you can use it on.
Yep.
And it really takes a lot of the exploration out. And you know how I feel about exploration, and so do all of our listeners.
It really
unless
streamlines.
Unless this is their first time. Yeah, they really... It feels like they thought, let's make this a child's game. You
pretty
know?
Much. That's so, what exactly what they did.
I mean, so I'm.
Although
I'm
to be fair,
Torrance Passage a try at some point as well.
Torrance Passage. How that compares. Yeah, I think they only made 3 games that I can think of in that era that had that interface. Those
was
being,
one Space Quest.
No, Space Quest actually has all the. Different,
oh, was it Phantasmagoria?
Yeah, it's Phantasmagoria, King's Quest VII, and Torrance Passage. I'll have that one click.
Phantasma Torrance Passage.
Yes. No. Sure. yeah.
Phantasmagorans.
I actually just finished watching the Retsupere of Phantasmagoria with
how did you like it?
Low tax. It was amusing, but it was kind of some parts got kind of annoying because they were like talking over the dialogue and then they would complain that they had no idea what was going on, and it was just like, well, if you'd pay a little bit more, I mean, granted, there's not a lot to it. There's not a lot to Phantasmagoria, but if you paid a little bit more attention to what was going on instead of just talking the whole time. You know,
I actually had the same trouble with King's Quest VII, and because I'm, you know, spending a fair bit of time engaging in mirthful conversation with you while playing it, and so I've missed a few clues because of that.
Oh,
but
I'm
you know,
sorry.
I enjoy your company, so you know,
good.
I'm willing to be ignorant about how to play a game.
If you miss out on anything, I can fill you in because I'm a giant nerd and I remember all of these stupid things. But anyway,
it's kind of funny. But so I also. I played through Sam & Max last weekend.
Okay.
Which is a great game. Sam & Max Hit the Road, that is. So that's a great game. So everyone should play that more.
Sure.
Things... What about you? You played through Bioshock. You finished Bioshock.
I did. I finished Bioshock.
The first one. Welcome to 2007.
Thank you. I really enjoyed Bioshock. I have to admit, I played a demo for it a long time ago. Well, I say a long time ago, and I mean like maybe a year ago.
That is a long time.
Yeah, I think, I don't remember if I played the demo before or after I saw you playing it.
Yeah, that's the last time I played it, was you were here. Yeah. I'm sitting in the exact same chair that I was sitting in there, and you were sitting on my carpet, and I was playing a bit of Bioshock, and then we drove away.
Yeah, yeah.
Forever.
Yeah. Well, maybe next
that
time.
That was an exaggeration, by the way. That was not factual.
That was hyperbole.
It was rhetoric.
Yes. Mel, maybe next time I'm over, you can play a little bit more Bioshock before we drive away.
Yeah, I'll play another 2 hours, and then
exactly.
Eventually, you'll have visited me enough times that I'll finish and I'll have had the complete Bioshock experience.
I'll be 80 something years old probably by that time. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. You know?
Yeah, I did. I played a demo for it a while ago, and I enjoyed it, and then I was very graciously gifted a copy from a bundle by Miranda Govan. Hello, Miranda Govan.
Thanks, Miranda.
And so I started playing it, and I was kind of like, this feels kind of abrupt, and I feel like they're just kind of throwing you in. But the more
I
played it...
It is a very abrupt start.
Yeah, but the more I played it, the more I enjoyed it. And by the time I finished it, the abrupt start made complete sense. So
good.
It did a good job of kind of justifying everything that was going on. And yeah, it became really interesting.
You're getting into... It pleases me. You're getting into, like, the thinking man's shooter genre, the Deus Ex, the sort of, you know, the Dishonored, that sort of thing, and now the Bioshock. It pleases me because I think it's a great genre.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah. Bioshock has some great, like, just influences of, like, objectivism and, like, all that sort of thing. And it's it's really interesting how it deals with those themes. It's not just, oh, shoot people. I mean, granted, there is plenty of shooting people and stuff.
Sure.
But it's, yeah.
How did you feel about the Art Deco setting?
I really enjoyed it.
Sort of, I mean, yeah. A Golden Wake isn't super Art Deco, but you obviously had that era in mind when you did it.
Sure. Well, yeah. I mean, yeah, Rapture is more like, I would say, probably like 30s, 40s, more than 20s. But
is that like Art Nouveau?
Art Nouveau. It's kind of like late Art Deco mixed with Art Nouveau, I think. But it works.
Do you know what else setting. Is? Do you know what else is Art Nouveau that I just got this week? Is Transistor.
Oh, really?
I only downloaded it. And I've played like 40 minutes of it or something like that. Okay. And I have to say, it's got like the Art Nouveau style with Portishead soundtrack, basically. So imagine Bastion. But with better music, better style, and slightly altered combat, which makes it more interesting. So basically, Bastion 2.0, but this time better. So
I still need to finish Bastion.
You got a lot of games. You're like me. You have a lot of games to play, which is good. You have an entire cornucopia of entertainment there.
Yeah, and a cornucopia that you actually can stick an ear of corn in.
You can stick the corn in the cornucopia in King's Quest VII, but it doesn't do anything. And me, having sort of figured the game out, going, okay, it's a Sierra game, let's do the terrible pun puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
And when I did that, I thought corn cornucopia, I've solved it. That's it. And guess what? I hadn't.
Nope.
I had to get some ambrosia.
Yep. But anyway, yeah, I finished with The Golden Wake, and I said that I was going to take some time off to play video games, and I sort of did, but nope, I've pretty much jumped into the next project, you're still not finished with Technobabylon. So.
No, I got the last background done midweek this week, and I've got a few animations left. Like, James has gone off to get married. Congratulations to James.
Congratulations, James.
His lovely wife-to-be, although by the time this podcast comes out, she may be his wife.
Yeah.
and so he had like this big list of what was left in the animations. I said, James, I'll probably have all this done by the time you get back, you know, next week. Yeah. So he was like, oh, well, okay, that's good. I'll give you some, like, so I've probably got a few like little background animations and stuff to do when he decides what he wants. But other than that, I'll be moving on to a project with you.
Good.
Which we don't talk about the title yet because
you get sick of
blanking it out.
Yeah, anything that makes me have to do extra work to edit, it just makes me makes me nervous.
Sick.
Yes, sick. Gross. Were you going to say something else, or could I?
Yes, I was talking to one of our listeners, Rizalka, the other day, and she said, I'd like you to do a podcast on starting a new project. And
oh, yes, okay.
That's really very topical.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I was going to say, what a perfect segue in talking about our new project and to talk about the topic for this week, which is, as you said, starting a new project.
You've lost me, but I'm here.
How did I lose you?
I don't know. Anyway, so we're going to talk about this week is starting a new project.
Yes.
And, when you start a new project, see, I used to have, back when I was like, you know, back when I'd only done a few games, I used to have like this routine whenever I finished a game, I'd have this thing that I do. It was that long ago, I can't even remember what it was, but I had like this little thing that I'd do. And that was my sort of personal thing, like, okay, I'm done. I've finished the game, on to the next one. And I had this little ceremony, I guess. Now, nah.
I used to have the exact same thing. What I would do was I would get all the I would print out my design document and I would I would make multiple copies and then I would shred up the paper and put it in the middle of the room and then I'd set it on fire and then I'd take off all my clothes and dance around while listening to native witchcraft music from Kenya.
I like that song.
Yes. Yeah. Let's move on, because I read a comment made by Stacey No, as a quick aside, I read a tweet by Stacey Davidson, who is doing the trailer for A Golden Way. Hello, Stacey Davidson. In which he said, people who are friends should never do podcasts, because they spend most of the time talking about their stupid in-jokes that no one else gets. Mm-hmm. So we're doing that too much, so let's become more friendly and mainstream.
I don't believe that story you told anyway. I was believing it, the whole shredding the thing, and then you said take off all your clothes. You don't wear any clothes.
Oh, yeah.
So you lost my suspension of disbelief was immediately gone.
Well, hey, sorry.
I used to have this thing, and one thing that I did before I started Blackwell Epiphany, mm-hmm. now out on Steam for $14.99.
You goddamn sellout.
And Good Old Games and Blue Green Man Gaming or whatever they are. There's a lot of different sites. I went through and I played the preceding four Blackwell games to kind of get my head into the space where, you know, the mm-hmm. thing. And kind of with Techno Babylon, you know, I went to my sort of my shelf and I got some films and I got some games, you know, stuff like Ghost in the Shell, you know, Beneath the Still Sky, Deus Ex, Blade Runner. I've watched twice now while making Techno Babylon. So I kind of immerse myself in the sort of the ideas and the philosophy and the worlds that have sort of some relevance or some connection to the project I'm working on. Not to copy so much as to go, okay, this is the mood I want. You know, for me, moods are really, it's not something tangible, but it's very important.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so for starting the project that we're about to start, you know, obviously I'll go back through the stuff we've done, because we've already done like the prologue. We've built the prologue.
Yeah.
Together when we had a free week or two at yes. some point during the year, which we
I don't even remember that. When we did this.
I don't know.
I think the last uploaded Yeah, I think the last uploaded prologue was like in December or something. So it was towards the end of last year.
Okay, there you go. And so it was probably before I started working on Techno Babylon. That was probably it.
Yeah, I'm sure it was.
So yeah, so I'll go through that and I'll probably, you know, I'll look at some of the literature and some of the art. And, you know, we collected some images that inspired us and there's some music that's inspired us. So that's probably the first thing that I'll do before going to this project is just immerse myself in that universe that I want this to be part of.
Yeah, and I'll do the same thing. I already watched Children of Men a while back and I took that as inspiration and wrote out the first chapter. And I've been waiting to watch V for Vendetta to write the second chapter, so... Yeah.
Okay. Well, don't give away too many plot points by your influences.
I don't think I've given any plot points away.
Probably not. Well, we don't want to tell them about the strawberry cough bit. See, I can do this now. I can do this.
Michael Caine is in our game. He's your.
That was like a really sad bit in that film because he was such a great character.
Yeah, I know.
That was actually really upsetting.
I know.
So maybe I'm just an emotional guy in my 20s, but I really
late 20s.
Well, you're still
in your mid 20s. You'll be in your late 20s come November. But
where is that? Is 27 the cutoff?
Sure, it's every 3 years from 20 to 20. Well, 20, 21, 22.
I think the math is off.
No, it's not. It's not. 20, 21, and 22 are your early 20s. 23, 24, 25 are... Well, I guess your early 20s are a little longer. Your 20, 21, 22... From 20 to 23 is your early 20s. From 24 to 26 is your mid-20s. And from 27 to 29 are your late 20s.
Okay.
I'm still in my early 30s.
You are.
For another year. And then I'll be in my mid-30s. And then I'll go, wow, what have I done with my life?
Wah, 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 boo-hoo.
Boo-hoo, wah, wah.
Don't forget that.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the sound old man make.
You want to hear a funny story? Actually, just
kind of, I love funny stories.
Sort of related to the idea of what have I done with my life. So I was at the indie drink night the other day, and I was talking to Anatoly, and we were talking about we were talking about GDC and like the adventure party and everything, and like
sure.
how Basically, it's because he was talking about how he's memorized the whole speech of Ask Me About Loom from The Secret of Monkey Island.
He has! And I love it every time he does it.
And he's bought the button, or badge, as you would call it, and
yes.
the Ask Me About Loom. And so I told him, you know, next year at the adventure party, you should buy a pirate hat and dress up as Cobb and sit in the corner and only talk to people who come up to you and say, "So tell me about Loom," and then give them.
You gotta have that. You gotta have that wispy little beard that Cobb has.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So basically, so we were having a laugh about that, and I was like, "Can you imagine if Ron Gilbert went up to you and was like, oh, yeah,
and
tell me about Loom,'
and
you got to
do
the sales pitch to Ron Gilbert? Wouldn't that be amazing?" Mm-hmm. And he was like, "Oh man, I would be so starstruck and blah blah blah."
Imagine if Brian Moriarty went up to him.
Oh man, that would be great.
That would be the one. That would be the thing. That would be excellent.
Yeah, but that led into the conversation about being starstruck and talking to Ron Gilbert and stuff. And then I was like, man, you know who should be starstruck is Ron Gilbert when he talks to me. Because he should be, I'll be like, man, Ron Gilbert, what have you done in the last few years? I've released an award-winning point-and-click adventure game. I'm a big-shot published developer
now. Have you won an award yet?
I think I just added that in right now, but you know, I'm kind of hoping
he did
that
he did the cave. Ron Gilbert did the cave.
I know, but I had a little bit of a laugh over the idea of me being so full of myself.
Of how important you are.
Yeah, being so full of myself that I would tell Ron Gilbert, "Oh, you're nothing. I've got a published game. Look at me. I'm important."
Just to clarify,
I would never do because I may be an asshole, but I'm not that much of an asshole.
I would love to meet Ron Gilbert because I'm sure Ron Gilbert meets everyone and talks about Monkey Island. Everyone wants to know about Monkey Island. I'd love to meet up and be like, "Tell me what you did on Total Annihilation."
Yeah, Ron Gilbert's cool. I've never actually had like a conversation with him. I've sort of awkwardly stood around while he's having conversations with other people and sort of like laughed and nodded and sort of, you know, been on the outskirts. Like I talked to him at the
Are you party. Facebook friends with him?
No, I'm not Facebook friends with him. Are you?
Then what? I don't use Facebook much. I'm not Facebook friends with half of my friends that are on Facebook.
Anyway. Yeah, anyway, we got deviated from the topic. Let's start a new project. I talk about starting new games. So we've talked about sort of getting the immersion period. Let's talk about
planning the game.
Yes, you read my mind, Chandler.
Oh, I'm here for you.
It's getting moist in here again.
Yes.
Ow! All right, so planning the game. There's good ways to do it, like doing a design document. That's a good way of... a good process to follow. Do you usually do a design document, Chandler?
I think... I haven't done many design documents, but what I do is I have a list, and my list is various things that you usually... find in a design document. One of them is the aim of the game. You call it an elevator pitch, I guess, and it's kind of sums up what you're trying to do with your game, what you're trying to make. So, you know, for a Golden Wake, I guess your elevator pitch would be a character study of a young real estate developer in 1920s Miami, and it follows his trials and tribulations as he... I don't want to spoil too much of the game, but yeah.
Well, actually, the reason it's called an elevator pitch, for those listeners who may not be aware of the terminology, is because the idea is that you want to get a summary of your game in one sentence. And
well, look, I've been in some pretty long elevator rides.
Yeah, well, but consider it
a
short elevator ride.
I had like this enormous big office building, and if you had to like go do training, then you had to go up to the top, and it took forever.
Well, let's just say it's a normal elevator. The idea why it's called an elevator pitch is because you want to be able to have it short enough that you can, if you're trapped in an elevator with someone who's interested in it, well, not trapped, but if you're in an elevator on an elevator ride with someone, well, yeah, if you're trapped, then you have time to tell them about the whole game.
You got a lot of time. Anyway.
But you want to be able to make your game. You want to be able to talk about your game and make it sound interesting in the amount of time it takes to take an elevator ride. So
it's a very quick summary.
Yes, exactly. So I will read you the synopsis, the first sentence from the Golden Wake design document, which I have just opened up, and I will tell you this is the elevator pitch.
How useful.
Yes. A Golden Wake is a story of greed, optimism, love, and redemption set against the backdrop of the 1920s Florida land boom. That's it.
That sounds like me when I was out on Tuesday night. Sounds like my Tuesday night, so I'm looking forward to playing it, because it sounds like something I can relate to.
You had all of those things happen to you on Tuesday night?
Yeah, go through the list again.
Greed?
Yeah, well, I ate all of my Smarties really quick.
Optimism?
Well, I was going to see The Godfather. I knew it would be a good film, so I was pretty optimistic about it.
Love?
I love the film.
Redemption?
I redeemed the fact that I hadn't seen The Godfather yet by watching it.
The backdrop of the 1920s Florida land boom?
Well, I was in a theater which was built, was erected in 1928. Oh, and wow. I remember that because it was the same year my grandfather was born.
Oh, really? My grandfather was born in 1928, too.
We're bros. See, it's all happening here.
Wait, no, your grandfather's no longer with us.
He sadly passed on last year. He passed on.
Oh, that's
on
the one who...
The very day I got home.
Like, that's right, yes. That grandfather. Well, my grandfather passed on 10 years ago, so...
Rest in peace.
He was a smoker. Don't smoke.
Both of our grandfathers.
Yes, yes.
I'm sorry. When I get upset, I lisp.
I see. When I get upset.
So anyway, yeah, so I was in a 1928 yes. building. There was not much Florida land boom there, I'll be honest.
Well, it's fine. But you know
but
what?
Look how close my...
But there's a Miami in Queensland, so it's close enough.
Look, there we
so,
go.
How about that? I have to say that was an old design document, so the love bit isn't in there anymore, because originally there was going to be a love story, but there isn't anymore. But so that's basically what you want to... What you want to think about for your elevator pitch when you're starting a new project, just to kind of serve as your guideline while you work on it.
Sure.
Obviously, things can change.
From there, I think even though you've got your setting sort of defined in there, you want to define your setting to the point, you know, the place, the time, what's happened, what major events are going to be relevant to your story and have an impact on the story, whether setting up or during the course of the game. You want to cover your characters. So, you know, main characters and also flavor characters. And also, from there, you want to go on the sort of plot points. You know?
You want to do an outline. You want to decide if your game is going to be broken up into chapters, or if it's going to be a three-act structure or more, or, you know, you don't necessarily have to...
Technobabylon's got, like, 11 acts.
Right, yeah. But, I mean, you also have to figure out, you don't necessarily have to in-game... specify this is chapter one, this is chapter
no,
two.
No, of course not. Of course
but,
not. Did you do that? You did that in a Golden Wake.
I did do that in a Golden Wake. It has chapter screens and titles. But
is it because you wanted to be like Grim Fandango?
Not so much because of that. Also, Grim Fandango didn't do that. It just did 1 year later.
1 year later, yeah. I know.
It was mostly because of the fact that there's so much passage of time that I thought it would be
Yours covers
easier.
A large span of time.
Yeah,
very
it covers 14 years. That's a long time.
That's about as old as I am mentally, so that's quite a while.
Yeah, well...
It's a decent little period.
It's actually more than half of your life, so...
It is.
So, yeah.
How young and adorable I am.
Well, one of those at least is true.
I know I'm old, but anyway.
Yes. Anyway.
Yeah.
Design documents. Yes.
So then when you're going into your project, another really important thing to define, and this is essential to get defined early on because this will affect how you can approach your design of the game, is to decide what sort of interface you're going to use and what sort of main character, because your main character will have abilities like whether it's a notebook or, you know, in your game, like the whole real estate thing, that will affect how you start designing gameplay. You know, you want to design your gameplay around a character. Like we were talking about with Richard last week with Full Throttle, where Ben is this really physical sort of guy. He kicks doors open, you know, he climbs chains up walls, that sort of thing. So it's important to know who you're writing puzzles for because it wants to feel realistic for that character.
Yeah, exactly. Also, you also want to decide, I guess, depending on if you're going to go in as a solo project or if you're going to be working as a team.
Well, you should, yeah. You should do that.
Well, I mean, obviously you're going to have that decision made before you start designing the game.
Well, not necessarily. Okay. Not necessarily.
Well, true, yeah. But you also want to kind of go for what art style you're going to do and, you know,
yes.
how you're going to animate that sort of thing.
For that, I recommend collecting reference pictures.
Yeah. I mean, when you sit down and you design your main character and your characters and you think, okay, well, how big are my sprites going to be? How big is this? Because, I mean, that affects a lot of things. If you have sprites that are a certain size, you have to account for how the backgrounds are composed and things like that.
Do a character first before you start any backgrounds?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
I'm the same, because you need to do your character so that you can have this reference for when you're constructing your backgrounds.
Mm-hmm. And I've always usually worked with kind of medium-sized sprites. My Ben Jordan sprites were usually, on average, I think the tallest one, which was Percival Quentin Jones, was about 71 pixels tall. Ben Jordan was about 68 pixels tall.
Chris Jones a tall man? Is that what inspired you to make him tall?
Well, Percival Quentin Jones was always based on John Cleese, and John Cleese is a tall man, so...
Okay, but how tall is Chris Jones?
Quentin Jones. I don't know. I'd say he's probably about maybe 6 feet tall.
Okay, so that's pretty tall.
He's a normal size guy, I guess. He doesn't tower over me, but he's not like you do. But you tower over everyone.
I'm Godzilla.
Yes, you are.
Welcome to the Blue Cup Tools podcast. My name is Francisco Gonzalez, and here we have Godzilla. Yeah, with me as always.
Man, if you ever come to New York to visit me, you're gonna have such a good time taking a shower, because you can pretend that I always pretend my shower curtain is a cityscape, and I always like pretending I'm King Kong, but you can really pretend that you're King Kong.
Yeah, and King Kong doesn't wear clothes, so it works.
Yeah, well, that too.
Yep.
You could just pretend it's King Kong. You're King Kong, and it's raining.
Well, that's the movie finale thing. It's always raining, isn't
it? True, that's true. That's true. It is.
Storm and like what? What's a good song that you could? What's a good piece of music that you could set that to just shower? I'm not familiar with disaster movies very much.
It's raining men. Hallelujah! It's raining men. I don't know.
By the Weather Girls? No.
I don't know. Anyway,
that's not disaster.
We've got on a tangent. You can listen to the music from the Gogolore level in Psychonauts.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. God, that was a great section. I love that.
Yeah,
in Lunchopolis. Yeah. We talked about that section last time on the podcast.
We did, second to last time, because last time we had Richard on. We cover a lot of the same ground, so let's do something new and talk about the thing. Yeah, so anyway, I was talking about sprites. So yeah, so with the game that we're doing now, I forget how big the sprites are because you're doing them, but they're a little bigger than I think I'm used to.
Yeah, I like fairly big sprites. I like to have a bit of character in there, and so you can put a bit of detail in there, you know. I started with really small sprites, and then, you know, I got slowly and slowly more confident to put detail in.
So yeah, in A Golden Wake, my sprites are all about average 70 pixels tall as well, so they're a little bit... slightly like 2 pixels taller than the Ben Jordan ones, but I'm actually thinking about the next game after. Yeah, I know. The next game I have planned after our joint game, and yes, I already have that in my head because I'm crazy. I'm actually considering experimenting with the idea of going a lot smaller for sprites, like maybe 50 something pixels tall.
That's a very small
sprite. Yeah, and doing minimalism and, you know, not putting details of like a face onto the sprite.
Is this because you're lazy? Have you gotten lazy?
No, it's because I'm interested in challenging myself, and also because I recently I watched a Let's Play of Shadow of the Comet, which had really small sprites also.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I mean, their animation is very stiff and clunky and not so great, but I thought...
Like my love life.
I'm not going to touch that one with a 10-foot pole. That's what she said... Not.
That's what she did. Did I tell you about my saying? That's what she said, Drick.
No,
not even a joke. I don't know why it makes me laugh.
Oh, watch out, Drick!
There's a poisonous snake.
Get it? A poisonous. Anyway. Yeah. Anyway. Yes. So, what was I talking about?
Talking about making
Shadow of the Comet.
Shadow of the Comet.
Well, not because of Shadow of the Comet, but I watched Shadow of the Comet and I thought, you know, this is kind of, I guess, similar in tone to what I am kind of going for in... I'm not doing a Lovecraft game or anything, but I thought, you know, this can work. And I mean, the portraits in that game were terrible because they were huge and took up the whole screen and, like, they were weird. But I think that, I mean,
well,
you can
well,
get
hey,
away...
Shadow of the Comet was EGA, wasn't it?
No, it was VGA.
Was it? Oh, there you go.
It
That's
looks
how
like
good
EGA.
Of memory I've got.
It looks EGA because the backgrounds are terrible, but yeah. So I thought, you know, that might be an interesting mix. I mean, it might not work, and I might go with something else, but it's something to start off with. And, you know, that's what
well,
you have to do.
You have
to experiment.
You experiment.
Exactly. You have to experiment, and you have to figure out what it is that you're going to go with. Because once you settle on a style, you're pretty much stuck with it. Because,
locked in.
Yeah.
Stuck in.
Especially, you know. Yeah, after you've done a fair bit, you can't just change your mind and
that's,
say,
that's
oh,
actually,
I'm going to do something
that's
else.
That's really frustrating for me a lot of the time because, like, a lot of the projects that I've been working on this year mm-hmm. are stuff that I started last year, and I've learned a lot since then, and I've grown a lot since then, but I'm stuck working in those styles.
Oh, yeah, me too.
So, you know, the project that I'm about to jump into now, I established the style for a year ago.
Yep, and you've learned a lot since then.
Yeah, so I'm stuck working in that style, more or less. So,
well,
you know.
Look at me. I did a couple of portraits for it, and I've learned heaps since then, and I'm in the process of redoing the portraits. Luckily, I only did, like, two, so it's not so... I've already redone those, and I'm working on new ones. But, yeah so it was the same with the Golden Wake. Like, halfway through, I redid all the portraits, and luckily I had time to... But, you know, if you midway through your project decide, oh, no, that's I have to redo everything, it's a lot of work, and you run the risk of just getting so overwhelmed that the project will never get finished.
I believe that that's a really good way to kill your motivation to work on a project, is just go, I need to redo all of this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're always going to want to redo everything. Everything you do, you're always going to want to look back at it and think, oh, man, I could have done so much better. Because you're always improving. And you hope... Well, hopefully you're always improving.
Hopefully you are. Yeah.
But, you know, it's just... You just have to move on and do something else and you know, go for it from there on. Out.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I burped halfway
through that sentence.
If you look at both of our game development history, you know, if you go back and you play my earlier games, I watched a Let's Play of Should I Got Abducted, which is a game that I really love because it's it's basically I didn't even try to tell a story. I was just putting in stupid jokes for my own amusement. So I really like it because of that, you know, and I was looking at my art from back then and going,
correct
wow,
me.
I wasn't.
Yeah, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't there a bit where he's floating around in space while wearing, like, a rubber ducky floaty?
Mm. Yeah.
Good. Yep. That's probably my favorite bit of that game.
That's how it ends.
Yes.
That's how it ends. While a mini version of John Denver's Take Me Home
Yes.
Country Roads plays. And the Let's Play, at the end of the Let's Play, the guy was singing the words to John Denver's Take Me Home Country Roads.
Nice.
So yeah, I was looking at that and I'm like, well... I've learned some things since then.
Sure.
You know? And I look at Blackwell Epiphany now and I'm like, oh man, these backgrounds are terrible. These character sprites are terrible. These animations are terrible, you know. And I do the same with Technobabylon.
Yeah, well, know, so. I do the same with the Golden Wake.
I said to Dave the other day, I was like, oh man, I'm always worried. Like, I look at Technobabylon, I'm like, oh, this isn't good. This isn't good enough, you know. And Dave's like, oh, that looks fantastic. And I'm like, well... What do you know?
Yeah. I look at the screenshots. I look at the screenshots that are going up on like even the trailer. I look at the trailer and there's like certain bits in the trailer. I'm just like, oh, why did you show that? Oh, why? Well, no, why?
There's always those scenes. Like, you know, something that a friend of mine said to me, which was really nice. You remember my bake sale game, Falling Skywards?
Yes, I do.
I remember during the
I
very
especially
first
remember
scene
it. I especially remember it because I beta tested it.
You did. While drunk.
Yes. And yeah. I named the bird.
You did name the bird Aloysius.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, continue.
Yeah. I actually met a human being called Aloysius.
I saw the name Aloysius the other day and it made me think of you. And
this was Aloysius, like E.
Oh, okay. No, I saw it with an A. I think it might have been in the Royal Tenenbaums, actually.
Oh,
you should watch that film.
Film
yeah, you should watch it. It's good. Anyway, please continue.
I
actually
watched many films, but I've been busy the last few weeks.
Yes, yes.
excuses. So I met a guy called Aloysius, and he was very, very strange.
Okay. Well, but,
I remember the very first scene I painted for Falling Skywards, and I showed it to a friend of mine, mm-hmm. and to just get a, you know, to see whether the character and the background fit to each other. He said, "Man, this is really nice." He said, "Now you have to spend the rest of your time trying to make all of your other backgrounds live up to that." And that's exactly true for every single project I do.
Sure.
Every single one. I look at the first scene I did for Techno Babylon, I'm like, well, that's, I like that one still. Mm-hmm. The rest of the time, I'm like, oh, man, I have to live up to that now. Well, that's, so what I'm saying is you should draw really bad from the start so you feel good for the rest of it. That's totally not true. But also, look at the first scene I painted for Blackwell, Epiphany. That's easily my favorite scene in the game.
Sure, the outside of the Karth House, which you talk about in the artist commentary about this very thing, about living up to your thing. Well,
I have no new things to say.
I still enjoy
Thank you for listening to the podcast. We'll be back next week.
I know. I still enjoy looking at the first background I painted for Golden Wake, which was the interior of the real estate office at the beginning of Chapter 2. And, I mean, there's some backgrounds that I painted around that time that I still like. There are some that I think, oh my god, how did I get away with that? There's backgrounds that I painted afterwards which I liked, other ones which I thought, oh god, I could do better than this, but I don't have time to touch them up. And so it's a process. Like, it's weird because, yeah, you have to live up to them, but sometimes you have bad days. You have, you know, but you have to get it done. How did this turn into an art podcast? We were talking about starting new projects. Well, it's all part and parcel.
This is still relevant.
Yeah.
You know, I have to say, like, I don't want to be mean or anything like that, but I usually, like, we give each other feedback on works, you know, like if you see something I've done, you go, oh, I like the color of this, or, you know, if it's like the thing. And sometimes I see old scenes that you've done that I might not have said anything to you about at the time, but my skills have improved since then, and I think, how did I let Francisco get away with that? And I'm the same with my own scenes.
Well, but because you didn't know any better at the time.
Yeah, that's right. So I've been learning a lot lately. I've been learning a lot of art. I've been drawing a lot of skeletons and skulls and things that you need to draw to get better at drawing.
I need to practice a bit more on backgrounds and composition and stuff, because I want to go into my next project where I have to do the backgrounds knowing more than I did with A Golden Wake. Because I feel like I'm getting good at portraits finally, sort of, but I want to get good at backgrounds too. So
I think that's the worst thing, is like when you're like you and I, and you have several different roles in a game, like you do the backgrounds and then you do the animations, but you also design the sprites that you're in. There's a lot of different stuff you got
to
do.
Yeah, and you have to be good at all of them and make them all consistent across the board.
That's right. So you're constantly trying to improve various things, you know. Yeah. So
it's like in an RPG where your stats are you want to have a balanced character. You don't want to have
It depends. It depends on your party.
You don't want to have your if you've got a background.
You can have one caster that's entirely buff space, you know.
Sure, but that's like if you're working on a team. But if you're doing it all by yourself,
very true.
You want to have your art, you know, your background skill as high as this is the most fucking nerdy thing I've ever said in my entire life.
Really, I'm not used to you talking like this. This is actually pleasant to me. I feel like we're
closer.
You don't want to have your
background skill be at like 35 when your portrait skill is at like 87, you know. Mm-hmm. You want to balance it out. You want to have everything at like in the 80s and stuff. And you want to, if you have to take a potion of background enhancement, god damn it.
You're really showing how little RPGs you've played.
I know. I'll stop now.
Because potions wear off very quickly.
Well, but sometimes a potion might be, you know, watching a YouTube video which teaches you something, a trick or something you can do real fast to,
I'll say this,
kind of temporarily
tricks,
improve your
about learning tricks. The number one trick to getting better at drawing is to practice constantly.
Yes.
Shortcuts are okay, but shortcuts will probably hold you back in the long run. I've learned this the hard way because I've used a lot of shortcuts in my time. The number one trick, one easy trick is to practice constantly.
Yeah, good.
I don't care what the housewives say. I don't care. They're always you know, we're always trying to tell you one thing. But yeah, so starting a new project, that's our topic. Let's talk about that, actually.
Well, we have been.
Sort of, yeah.
We have been. We've covered the fact that you want to figure out
we should talk about your also influences. Like the interface.
And, oh, yeah, your interface. Good.
You need to decide, like, one right click. You know, most games these days use a left mouse button and a right mouse button for a look and a use thing, and that's about it.
Yeah.
So that was easy. That was easy to talk about.
Well, speaking as someone who did a whole series of games which had the traditional Sierra icon bar and look and touch and two-talk cursors, I can say that it's probably... Unless... This just goes into game design philosophy, but there's really no need for all of that. You don't want to give your player too many ways to interact with the world. Because honestly, and I mean, my main argument for this is because if you're in an adventure game and you want to explore things, the most annoying thing that you can get is you can't do that. So if you're going
to
have...
It's cool to the touch.
Yeah, right. It's cool to the touch. If you have all these options to interact with things, you better put in custom messages, because if you have a touch icon and you click on a character, I mean, you can have a default, oh, you don't want to touch them or whatever. But the fact that you have the touch icon available means your player is probably going to want to touch everything. So take that into account.
We should make a game where, like, you can just go around tickling everybody.
Yeah.
Let's do that in our current project. That'd fit the world that we're working with.
Let's
That'd
add a fit feather. The setting. Let's add a feather, and every time you use the feather on someone, they just go, ooh!
Or they sneeze and send you into the desert.
Yes, okay.
Was that good? Is that... How good was that?
I have to admit, I don't understand what the correlation between sneezing and going into the desert is. Which King's Quest are you referring to?
King's Quest 7 reference.
When did she sneeze?
No, well, you tickle the giant stone head.
Oh, the first time. Right.
The first time he just wakes up and sneezes. The second time he blows you over the stream. The third time he says, I warned you, and then blows you all the way into the desert where the skeleton is, and you have to walk north twice.
Oh,
and
my
then
God.
North twice again through the cavern and then across the bridge.
I never did that.
Oh, man, I love making I love annoying characters in games. It was great. So, there you go. You've learned something about King's Quest VII, a game you played in your childhood.
I didn't play it in my childhood. It came out in 1994.
How old are you? Man, 1994, I was a wee baby. I was a wee bubby. 1994, I was like, oh, God.
You were 7.
Wow.
I was 12. I was a preteen.
Wow. Well, yeah, you're Is that tween? Is that tween, or is that the one between 20 and like 17?
No, tween is when you're tween like 12.
Module.
Yeah, exactly.
By Edmundo Ruiz.
But when I was that age, the word tween didn't exist yet, so I was a preteen.
We've invented some words since then. We've got Google since that time.
Oh man, I saw a funny joke that Conan did on his monologue the other day.
Okay.
Which, I saw it on Twitter. Let me see if I can find it, because it's funny, and I want our podcast listeners to hear it as well.
We want to share the love of ginger-haired men.
Yeah, exactly.
With all of our listeners. We're basically going to steal Conan's jokes for our podcast.
Yes, here it is. I found it. The Oxford Dictionary has added the words YOLO and amazeballs. The Oxford Dictionary also announced it will no longer include the word standards.
You never understood the word amazeballs. What does it mean?
I don't know. I guess it's something that's really...
Does it mean
amazing.
You've got amazing balls?
Maybe.
Is that what it means?
Maybe.
Like, I've never seen balls of any description. You know,
at all?
Spheroid objects, or whether they're, you know, testicular.
Oh, right.
I've never seen them be amazing. I've never seen a ball and just gone, wow! Wow!
Yeah.
You know, ball, amazing. Something, if you were going to say amazing, the first word that comes to my mind is grace. Because it's beautiful. That's,
okay.
You know. I think it's a very weird thing to associate.
Well,
fears or globes yeah. with amazing.
Well, here's a question, and it probably makes more logical sense, this portmanteau, than anything else, if it even is a portmanteau. Have you ever been eating at a restaurant or something, or just eating a meal with, you know, some sauce, and you eat the sauce and you think, this is pretty awesome?
I have, yeah.
Okay, then I guess awesome sauce makes a little bit more sense.
Yeah, I guess, yeah. Awesome sauce.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've probably thought that. You know, you can get some awesome sauce for your dinner.
Mm-hmm.
Man, this sauce is awesome.
Yeah.
But I mean...
Well, it's again, like if you go to the East Village...
Sauce is such an everyday thing. You eat sauce regularly.
Yeah, but if you go to the East Village and you go to Pommes Frites, they have several varieties of awesome sauce to try. And this is in no way, shape, or form a plug for them, but they're really good. Yeah.
Okay, again, so if you're ever there, if you're anywhere near the East Village, is East Village like the kind of weird hippie town?
No, not really, not anymore.
Okay.
But yeah, if you ever come to New York, we will go to Pommes Frites, and you will probably explode with the awesome sauce.
I like sauce.
Do you like French fries?
Oh boy.
Do you like Do you like Belgian fries?
I have never had Belgian fries.
Well, they're pretty much just the thick cut fries.
Oh, sure, I like them. As long as they cook well, they have to be double cooked.
Yeah,
you gotta if you're doing thick French fries, you gotta fry them, drain them, then fry them hot. So the potato, and then you pull it out, and then you know, so you
and you get several different sauces to choose from, and you get them in a paper cone.
What other do they have like the peanut satay sauce? That's my favorite.
Yes, they do actually.
Oh, delicious!
They have like mango chutney and like all sorts of. They have like I don't know how many different varieties.
I've had a lot of different chutneys, but I've never had mango chutney.
Yeah, I don't know. I could probably look up a list for you after we finish podcasting because we're on a tangent yet again.
No, we're not. Ridiculous.
I'm just secretly trying to entice you so that you finally come visit New York. With all the food.
I was going to say, this has worked more than anything else so far. this is the closest I've been to tempted.
Wow, that makes me sad. All those other times.
Like friendship and, you know, exciting adventures in another country.
Who cares?
Really good French fries.
Yeah!
Mango chutney and peanut satay sauce. I'll be honest, I'd probably leave the mango chutney. Mango's alright, but some people love it and some people loathe it. And me, I'm just like, it's okay.
I'm not a huge fan of mango, although, yeah, it's whatever. What you don't want to do as far as interface, reeling it back in, is I don't particularly care for the one-button click interface because, like you said, it makes things just way too easy. And I think limiting the exploration of your game just makes it too childish. So I think there's plenty of flaws with the, you know, left-click to interact, right-click to look. But I think it's probably the best medium, the happy medium. Verb coins are all right, too, sometimes, but I don't know. I don't think I can wrap my head around the coding of a verb coin.
I've done a verb coin before, and I've thought about revisiting that area of my life, that the verb coin phase, you know, that sort of, that attitude towards design. Because I really like, but if I did a verb coin, remember in 5 Days a Stranger by Ben Yahtzee Croshaw?
Sure, that interface
where you had
was
like a kind of contextual verb coin.
Yeah, that interface was very clunky in those games, I found.
It was, but I would like to do like that where you've got like, you know, like The Sims, where you've got like a menu of stuff that you click on the thing and you got 10 different options or you've got
like
two different options.
Like a radial wheel, a contextual radial wheel.
Yeah, sure. That's kind of like what I'd like to do at some point. Because I think The Sims style really allows for a lot of versatility to the designer. Because sometimes there's about, you know, 10 different things you can do with an object. And other times it's just a houseplant and all you can do is look at it.
Right.
Know? So,
Well, you could also water it.
I could do what?
Water it.
With what? You don't know my items.
With piss.
Oh, this is not Snakes of Avalon.
Oh, really? Could you pee in the plant in Snakes of Avalon?
I think so. I know that you get a full bladder as an item when you've drunk enough, which is kind of fun. And you have to dispose of it into something, and I forget if it's a plant or not.
Okay.
It's been a long time since... It's been like 4 years since I've played Snakes of Avalon.
Okay, so not, fair enough.
So, that's a long time by my standards. Four years. I've done a lot in 4 years. I'm successful.
So...
I'm an achiever.
You're a blowhard is what you are. No one says...
what, sorry?
No one says blowhard.
No, nobody does. Unless you're... You know, unless it's your birthday and there's lots of candles.
Oh, okay.
You're old. I wasn't going to be rude.
I was afraid where you were going with that.
No, I wasn't going to do anything sexual in nature for my comedy. My comedy's more advanced than that.
Good, I'm glad.
No, you're not. You wish I was more like that.
Good anyway. God, no, I don't.
You know what I should play? I should play the Leisure Suit Larry games.
I guess.
Wow, you sound convinced. I played 2, and everyone tells me that 2's like the worst one.
Oh, it absolutely. 2 is absolutely the worst one.
Well, although that's the impression it left me. I hated
5's pretty crappy as well, but...
Yeah. Is that Passionate Patty?
That's, Passionate Patty does a little undercover work. But Passionate
Undercover,
Patty first...
Undercover, I get it.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. Exactly. But if you want to go for, like, the... If you want to go for the absolute Leisure Suit Larry experience, I would say 6 and 7 are the best ones.
Mm, that's Love for Sale and...
Shape Up or Slip Out.
Ah, right. Okay. Alright. Thanks for the recommendation, mate.
Yeah, I suppose. Alright, Cobb. So,
brother. Yeah. Amigo.
Gatubela.
Man, you know what's weird is that...
You?
Amigo means girlfriend, so that, like... Amiga means, like, female friend.
Amiga...
the Amiga is a...
What?
Doesn't Amiga mean female friend?
Yes. But it doesn't...
So, yeah.
But, what?
That makes the Amiga a very sad name for a computer system.
Oh, that. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Anyway...
It's your lady friend.
I'm getting really distracted tonight on the podcast. I'm sorry, everybody.
No, you're not.
I'm not. I really don't give a shit about what you think. You didn't pay money for this podcast, I can say what I want. And if you did pay money, well, Francisco didn't tell me that you paid money, and he's probably spent it all on games that aren't Baldur's Gate.
You hush.
Disgusting.
I bought Conquest of the Longbow. You bought Conquest of the Longbow.
I bought Conquest of... Man, we're...
We're Conquest of the Longbow.
We're Sierra...
Man, no, you know what we are? Bro. No, wait. You know what we are? We're Conquest of the Longbows. Yes!
I knew it. No. Disgusting. You sicken me.
I clap my hands in delight.
I heard. People, you've got a microphone. People can tell that. Oh, man. This is probably, I gotta say, this is probably the most distracted our podcast has done, but I'm still not ready to wrap up.
We say that every time.
I know. All right, I'm still not ready to wrap up.
All right, then what do you want to talk about?
I don't know. I just want to shoot the shit, you know, talk chat.
But we do that all the time. We do that when we're not recording the podcast. Why are we subjecting listeners to this crap? They don't want to hear about our stupid shit shooting.
You know what we should do?
We should talk about starting projects. And we've already talked about... let me cover our bases here to see if we have to talk about anything else. We've already talked about what you should listen to, or the things you should immerse yourself in to get a feel for the project. We've talked about deciding your art style. We've talked about writing your design document. We've talked about deciding your interface. What else is there to talk about?
Man, we're
music?
Actually way more productive.
Yeah, we're way more productive than it seems. Music, if you're going to do your own music, you want to decide the tone of the music that your game is going to have. If not, you're gonna, you know, you want
to. Oh, you
want to
have a decision anyway, so you can tell your musician, you know, this is what I want.
Sure. And when you start a new project, I think it's important to tell your musician what your project is going to be, so they can get an idea. But I also think it's important to wait until you have a substantial amount of your project done, so your musician can play it or see it to get an idea. Because some musicians work better. I know Pete Gresser, my musician collaborator, he really enjoys playing the games. And to get an idea of what he's going to do for them. So, there's that.
I will say this. This may sound a little bit weird, but it helps if you can read a little bit of a character's dialogue before you draw them. Just to get a little bit of an idea for who they are. That probably sounds weird, but I know it does.
Oh, yeah, there's another thing. When you're writing your dialogue and your characters and stuff, that's another thing, too. Read it out loud. to see if people talk. Like, here's the thing. Here's the thing. And this is not to blow my own horn or anything, but I've noticed that, you know, in previews and in reviews of my games, one thing that has consistently been praised in my games is the quality of the writing. And I don't particularly think I do anything special. When I approach characters, the only way I write them is, how would people talk, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense.
I think that's pretty much the hallmark of what makes writing good or not, you know? If you write a character and you make them all, oh, I'm this, blah, 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 you know? People don't read your dialogue out loud.
Well,
and
really,
think to yourself,
I will say this.
I mean, it depends on the character.
It depends on the tone you're going for.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. But even
like
still,
in your case, you write very, you know, realism focused games. If you're writing a stupid wacky comedy, then you can get away with it a little bit more.
Yeah, but even if you're writing like some sort of high fantasy thing with if it's in like ye olde English or whatever, you know,
I fucking hate games in ye olde English.
I hate them too. But I mean, let's not discourage people from let's discourage. But don't do your game in ye olde English. It's stupid.
Good. I agree.
You're not Shakespeare, and you never will be.
Burn tool either. I'm just throwing that in there. It's been too long since we've condemned it, so you know.
I learned that many, many years ago. So yes, be like me and don't use the dodge or the burn tool. But you've derailed my train of thought. Oh yes, read your character's dialogue out loud, and think about it and be like, is this the way that people speak? Because I'll guarantee you, dollars to donuts, if that's a phrase I've been wanting to use for a while. I don't know if I used
it correctly. I've never heard that before in my life. I like it a lot.
Oh, really? Well, I can bet you dollars to donuts that if you read your thing and it doesn't sound like someone would speak naturally, that you're going to be... people are going to say, this does not sound natural at all. And especially it's especially true in the case sometimes... sometimes you might read it out loud and think, okay, this sounds fine, and because you wrote it, obviously, and it's in your head. But then when it comes time, especially if your game is voice acted, that someone else reads it, you kind of can realize, oh, that doesn't work, and you have to change it on the fly. That's happened to me several times. Be it, you know, because something doesn't sound right, or because a word is repeated twice in the same sentence that you didn't catch necessarily, that sounds just awkward or something. But yeah, I think the key point is to remember that just, you know, people talk. People talk all the time. Make sure that you talk like a person. Otherwise, it's going to sound weird. That's my soapbox, and now I'll jump off. And now I'm short again. Boo.
Holy mackerel.
Yeah, exactly. Well, look, perfect example, because we haven't done it yet, and I've used this example many, many, many times. Is our good friend David Cage. And
hi, Dave.
And Heavy Rain. And the fact that he makes his characters sound American by making them say words like ain't and gonna. And I know I've said this many times, so I've beaten this horse into the ground. It's dead and it's rotten and the carcass is awful. But do not make your characters say trite things or silly things just in an attempt to make them sound, you know, especially if you're working with like other nationalities and stuff. Like if I wrote an Australian character and I just had him say, "Ah, oh, g'day mate, ah, fucking out, comma." It's Bogan Baz, the adventure game, and nobody wants that. Mm. Unless you're playing like, you know, what was that game that was amazing with the wise
Bruce
old
Quest.
Dava? Yes, Bruce Quest. That was great.
That was fun. He actually, there was one really good Australian accent in there, and the rest of it was just...
Which one?
You know who I'm talking about.
I actually don't remember.
Bruce had the good accent.
Oh, that, which is funny, because Bruce was Eggy, and who's not Australian.
Yeah, but Alex did a great job. It was fantastic. Yeah. He really nailed the ridiculous, like, oh,
that's pretty,
get out of cop, you know.
Yeah,
I can't do it because I've been singing. So
that's funny because Wise Old Devo was the only Australian in the actual Australian
in
the game.
And Wise, but see, I'm more Australian than most Australians, like, you know.
Yes.
So
Zenogia has mentioned this to me several times.
Man, I remember when I first talked to Zenogia on the telephone, when I called him up, and I'm like, oh my god, I must sound like a... I must sound like just some backwater, like, I must sound like the Australian equivalent of a hillbilly to him. You know, he's got like, he always teased me because I tell him he's got a cultured Melbourne accent, whereas I've got this, you know, crikey, g'day, how you going, love, get us a pie, will ya, you know.
Yeah.
This
make shit. Sure it's not yeah. Mrs. Max.
Holy mackerel, holy Mrs. Mackerel.
If it ain't Mrs. Mac, take it back.
Yeah. All that shit.
Your dad taught
me that. No Australians speak like. No one says that unless they're joking, you know. I mean,
yeah, of course.
I will say more Australian. I will say more Australian things than 99% of Australians. So if I don't say it,
yeah,
no one's gonna say.
Well, I'm American, and I don't use ain't or gonna. Well, I use gonna, but I don't say ain't very much.
I use ain't sometimes.
Sometimes.
Yeah, that ain't gonna work, you know.
Okay.
See, I just use both then.
Yeah, I know. Well, you have to. It kind of they kind of go together, but still.
Yeah.
If you're gonna use gonna, don't use it with ain't.
basically, don't make your characters shoehorn the phrase into every sentence or because like it into awkward forced. Spots.
Yeah.
It's like some people, you know, you and I have laughed before about like when someone's been brought up kind of sheltered and they try and be part of a group by swearing and they have no idea how to swear.
Exactly.
Like, oh man, this bloody fucking thingy. Just like that's
yeah.
No one talks like that. Or no, what exactly. The shitting hell's going on? That's not how you
I read it. A comic. I remember my cousin had a comic one time. It was like an Alien versus Predator comic or something. Sure. And I don't know what the deal was, if they were like trying to go for a PG-13 or something, and they couldn't use the word fuck. And so all the dialogue where they should have, where fuck would have worked better, they replaced it with shit. So it was like, this is shitting amazing, and this and that, and it just sounded so awkward and so how weird. Horrible. It was terrible. So yes.
Yeah. Basically, you need to practice the sort of dialogue aloud that you're trying to write, so you get into like what feels right to say.
Yeah. It's an art form. Yeah. Just like swearing is an art form, so is talking.
Fucking oath. I've had 6 years of like working blue collar work with like people that swear constantly, so you know. I'm pretty amazed balls at swearing. Just as a bit of a throwback there, so
You know what? You should, because YOLO
swag.
And on that note, thanks for listening to our podcast.
Hang on, I gotta say this.
Swaggetti YOLO nays, I know.
Nays.
Yes, I know.
I'm like so current. I'm so current. Like, oh man, I could be a California raisin.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. If you want to listen anymore, I don't know why you would, but follow us on Twitter at @BCT_podcast. You can also find us on iTunes, which I also forget to mention all the time if you look up Till's podcast.
Find us on iTunes and give us a review.
Give us a review. We've had two so far, and they've both been very nice. So go and counterbalance that by saying, these two idiots don't know what the fuck they're talking about, and they're just saying a bunch of shit that doesn't make any sense.
And... It's been doing for far too long, and Ben only...
Oh, I've lost... You're going to have to say that again, because we've lost... You cut out terribly.
Okay. Francisco has used the dodge and burn tool too much in his life. You can put that in review. And also, Ben only said, holy mackerel, like... 4 or 5 times in this podcast, which is insufficient.
I see. Okay, yes, and if you want to follow us individually on Twitter for whatever reason, you can follow me @GrundislavGames. And since Ben is dying, you can follow Ben @Ben_304.
No, so, I was just being quiet for fun.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. Anyway, thanks for listening. See you next week, and eat your vegetables.
Goodbye.